Becoming a child of God, that's in many ways, that's really a pretty easy thing to do, to put on Christ. It's in some ways, it's kind of like getting married. Getting married is really a relatively easy thing to do. You don't have to pass a test and you don't have to do all of the things that are associated with some of the hard things, but it's the being married that's the hardest part of the whole marriage endeavor. Well, in many ways, the responsibilities of being a child of God are the hard part of being a child of God. And we began last week talking about 1 Peter, the third chapter, beginning at verse 8. Finally, be ye all like-minded. This is from the American Standard Translation. Be ye all like-minded, compassionate, loving as brethren, tender-hearted, humble-minded, not rendering evil for evil, or reviling for reviling, but contrariwise blessing. For hereunto were you called, that you should inherit a blessing. For he that would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears unto their supplication. But the love of the Lord, the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. Who is he that will harm you if you be zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, blessed are you, and fear not their fear, neither be troubled, but sanctify the Lord in your heart, Christ as Lord. Being ready always to give answer to every man that asks you a question concerning the hope that is in you, yet with meekness and fear, having a good conscience, that whereof you are evil spoken against, they may be put to shame who revile you and your good manner of life in Christ. So the thrust that Peter suggests for us is to sanctify the Lord in your hearts. That's, as we said last week, that's not a phraseology that we use very often. So what I think Peter does is in the beginning of this passage, he starts to identify what it means to do this. And we talked about some of those things last week, being compassionate, loving as brethren, being tenderhearted, being humble-minded, not rendering evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but contrariwise a blessing, for thereunto were you called, that you should inherit a blessing. Refrain your tongue from evil, your lips that they speak no guile. And as we think about those things, many of them are the kinds of attitudes that we find difficult to implement, especially rendering blessing for an evil thing that's done to us. That's pretty hard. But we can do that in Christ. Then let's continue. He says, turn away from evil. What's that mean? What do you think of when you think of turning away from evil?
Sin.
Turning away from sin, okay.
If you're in a group where there's an off-color joke being told, you just turn around and walk away.
Okay. And in many ways, that gets right down to the core of the thing. Don't participate. Yeah. Anything else?
Avoid evil companions. people that went to riot.
Okay. That's kind of the way that you're going to help yourself do this. Don't run around with people that are getting in trouble all the time. As parents, we tell that to our children. Our parents told that to us. Their parents told that to them. That's something that's been said over and over again. If you want to stay out of trouble, stay away from people that get in trouble.
To turn away seems to be, to me, to suggest some activity that you're actually, that you're actively doing something. You're not just avoiding a situation, but you are actively shunning evil, turning away from evil, fleeing from the devil is another way to say it. You're not being passive. You are active in that.
Okay. So in keeping with that, that's the next phrase that he uses. And maybe Kim has suggested, maybe we ought to link those two things. Turn away from evil and do good.
Yeah, I think that you have to learn what God says is good. And so it's a matter of proving yourself to and humbling yourself to learn his word and to put yourself aside.
Okay. And that's a good point. It's many times it's more complicated to not do evil. Have you ever thought about that? It's easier to write a law that tells you what you're supposed to do than it is to write a law that covers all of the possibilities that you could find yourself in. And I can tell you, having raised kids, that you can't possibly tell them not to do everything that you want them not to do. It's just not possible. You can't make up that list. I don't know if my kids were not nearly as bad as I was, but my mother would give me a long list of things I wasn't supposed to do. And I generally could find things to do that she didn't put on the list. Doing, you know, turning away from evil is in some ways not as instructive as doing good. So I think Kim kind of hits it on the head when she says that these two things kind of go together. And we're fairly good at, most of us are pretty good at avoiding the really heinous sins. My guess is that nobody here in the building tonight or nobody at home has ever killed anybody and murdered anybody. Okay. Now, and my guess is that nobody here in this building or joining us on Zoom, that nobody has ever robbed a bank. We're pretty good at doing that, at avoiding those things. But the other side of that is, I know if you talked about the good things that we ought to be doing, immediately I would have to say, well, I didn't do that. I did some other things, but I didn't do that. And I think most of us are kind of in that boat. Yeah, Bob.
We don't all have to do everything, though.
No, that's true.
We all have our certain gifts.
That's true. Good point. Good point. But sometimes I neglect to do what I have been gifted to do. And that's, I suppose, even more serious than for me to say, well, I don't ever lead songs. Okay. I don't ever sing. If you threw me into prison like Peter was thrown into prison, like Paul and Silas were thrown into prison, I'm never going to convert the jailer because of my singing. It's just not going to happen. Okay? But I could, hopefully, sit down and engage him in conversation. I'm not gifted to do the singing, but I'm gifted to do something else. And we're all gifted in one way or another. So this responsibility that comes from God, this is a responsibility to do what you know you should be doing. Okay? We go on to the next one. Do good. And that, I think Kim is right. This is kind of linked to don't do evil, but do good. And if you're doing good, it tends to keep you from doing evil. What's the old phrase? Idle hands or the devil's workshop. Is that the way it goes? You remember the man whose house was swept and cleaned, the demons were cast out of that house, but he didn't do anything in response, and the demons came back. Your nature abhors a vacuum. So find something good to do and do it. Do it with all your heart, because that's what God wants you to do. Other comments, questions?
I think you have a choice. I think when it comes to the crossroads, you have a choice of doing evil or a choice of doing good. You can avoid the evil. And sometimes they'll kick you into doing the good when you think about the evil that comes into your mind. And you choose. It gives you a chance to choose doing that which is good. I had a tough time. I never was as bad as my brothers and sisters, but you know they.
Wait, I know your brother.
But you know, I think you have a choice, and I think those crossroads pop up, and you have a conscious choice about being evil or doing good. And I think the more good that you do, as time goes by, you can avoid the evil and get into that pathway of trying to do what's right all the time. Evil's going to pop up no matter what. And it's going to tempt you. We're told that's what it is. But you have a choice of doing good. And the more you do good, I think it becomes easier to avoid the evil.
I think that's probably true, yeah.
Excuse me, I'm just thinking, Paul seems to address this probably in several of his books, but in particular, Romans 7 and 8, where you have the choice, he said, of following the appetites of the flesh to lead to death, or you're led by the Spirit to do good, which leads to life. It's only two roads, the left and right. There's wrong, right or wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, and he asks, the question is asked on a number of different occasions, how long will you waver or vacillate between two courses? You can't stay there forever. You have to choose one or the other one.
But when you choose evil, and we all make mistakes, we're all going to surrender to that from time to time. But the nice thing about it is the Lord's given us an avenue to get away from that and be forgiven. What a wonderful gift.
Right. And it's not like once we make a mistake, we're tied to that mistake for the rest of our life. We can seek God's forgiveness.
Yeah.
you know, God forgets those evil things when we ask him to forgive us. But we can't necessarily forgive those things. Use it for experience. Well, I've done that. I've done that. Been there, done. So I know to avoid that. So it's always in the back of our mind.
Yeah.
That those things are in our past. God can forgive us and forget, but it's difficult for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing good. Okay. Other comments before we move on?
And to look at this thing, I tend to look at the grammar, the way that the sentence is composed. It's a statement of, don't do this, but I'm not going to leave you hanging until you not want to do. He says, turn away from evil and do good. The two go together and they're joined with that and. And we see that several times right before. He says, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips, they speak no guile. Refrain your tongue from evil, but do this instead. So those the statements go together. And I think that's the beautiful thing, is that it's not just, don't do evil, I'm going to leave you hanging. Do this instead. And we see that over and over again.
Yeah. And, you know, that may get back to Bob's illustration. Somebody starts telling an off-color joke, or somebody starts discussing things that are just going to lead to all kinds of trouble. We can just walk away, and I suppose that's the ultimate way to absent yourself from being participant in that. But we might do more good if we change the subject.
Just by walking away, though, you make a statement, because people notice when you walk away.
That's true.
They think, oh, that person's a prude, or boom.
Yep.
Why is he walking away, or she walking away?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You make a statement when you walk away.
But if you get in someone's face, you might turn that opportunity around into something more antagonistic.
Yeah. Interestingly, he goes on and he talks about that. Seek peace and pursue it. My goal is not to get in your face. I want to be at peace. Somebody had their hand. Ruth, was that you that had your hand up, or are you just making a bid? Seek peace and pursue it. Any comments? Anybody see anything there? Yeah.
Well, in my personal life, I've been estranged with my brother and my sister. And we were all three raised in the church. And so I had no association with him for a long time. And I wasn't comfortable with that. So I seek them out. And the way I did it was I wrote a letter to them and started that way and put all the blame on myself, because no one likes to say they're wrong. But then that was a springboard where we could get together and have a conversation instead of just going on like we were. And of course, in any relationship that's gone south, all parties are to blame.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true. Seek peace. There's a story that's told about a native group. And anytime someone wants to get a divorce in this native group, the husband and wife have to go live with the oldest woman in the camp. And she's going to observe them for a period of time. And then she's going to decide whose fault it is. It turns out that when they go and live with this woman, they seem to resolve their differences. There are very few divorces because nobody wants to be the one that's at fault. So they go and they start acting like they should have acted around their spouses. That's seeking peace. Yeah.
What's the difference between peace and pursuing?
Seeking is looking.
Yeah.
Pursuing is a little more.
Yeah, Faye?
Seeking is don't have it, we find it. Pursuing is don't let go. Keep going.
Okay, good thought. Much better thought than what I had. I never thought about the question. What do you think it is, Kirsten? Oh, I'm sorry. I have on my reading glasses. Oh, it is Vicky. I have on my reading glasses so I can see the screen, but I can't see you guys. So you can do whatever you want. Go ahead, Vicky.
I don't know. I was just, to me, when you speak, it was the same thing to me because I think that fighting to speak and try to find it, and to me, it was the same as pursue, but what changed it?
Yeah.
You know, I think these are both action words. Again, like we talked about before, turning from is an activity. It's not just avoiding sin or avoiding evil. It's an active where you turn from and seek and pursue. And it could be just a literary escalation where he says, seek it and then pursue it. Stick with it. Make it your goal. It's an action word. And I think sometimes we think that we're being active when we're being passive. This is not being passive. This is actually seeking and pursuing. It's an intention.
Okay.
And this may be just a literary escalation by the writer. I don't know.
I was thinking about when you said literary escalation, Proverbs 23:23, and now it escapes me exactly how that's worded. But seek truth, sell what you have to get truth. Yeah. Thank you. I think that's one of those literary escalations.
Dean,
it
reminds me of one of the preachers somewhere down the line says, nobody can make you angry. That's the first sort of the first step is controlling yourself so that you are not angry. And so then pursuing peace is to then listen to the other person and see how you can help them or resolve the situation in a peaceful way. And the other thing that it made me think about is that when two brothers have a problem, the solution is that they meet halfway between each house. Because you're supposed to go to your brother. So if they're both doing what's right, they'll pursue it and meet halfway in between.
Maybe a good way to understand it. Somebody else had a comment. I don't know whether it was on Zoom or whether it was somebody here in the auditorium. Okay. The eyes of the Lord, he says, are upon the righteous. He hears their supplications, but the face of the Lord is upon them that do evil. Who will harm you if you're zealous for what is good? What does it mean to be zealous for what is good? I heard somebody had a thought. What does it mean to be zealous?
Well, it's another action word. It's focused, almost single-minded. When I think of zealous, a zealot, someone who is single-minded and almost rabid about what they're doing. That's not a good word for it, but totally and completely devoted to this and will pursue it at just about any cost. I can't think of another. I'm not articulating that very well, but again, it's another action word.
Okay.
Can I go back a little bit, Dean?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about in seeking peace. I think that we've probably all encountered people who seem to want to destroy our peace. And I'm wondering, when we seek peace, are we talking about seeking a peaceful relationship with the other person or finding peace within ourselves?
That's an interesting question. Didn't think about it. What do you think it is?
I kind of look at it as seeking peace for myself, because that's something that I have control over, and I don't necessarily have control over the people around me.
Okay. There's something to be said for that. I had always assumed, it just never occurred to me to ask that question. I'd always assumed that it was seek peace with your neighbor. As much as lies within you, be at peace with all men. So I can't control you. If you choose to pursue a behavior that leads to discord, a behavior that is disruptive and destroys peace, then I may not be able to change you. And if I seek peace, I can't necessarily overcome you. That's why we put some people away from us.
I can always find a way to find peace in myself just by turning to God.
Okay. Well, we can always seek peace for ourselves. And that's a very good point. Somebody else had a comment, question.
I was going to mention that zealous for that which is good, it takes effort. It takes the ability to concentrate on going in a specific direction, which is good. As you said earlier, it's actually pretty easy to do things wrong. And the more you do it, the easier it is. Because if you are zealous and you can put a genuine effort into seeking good, perhaps it becomes easier in your life. And that would lead one to a peaceful life to themselves, in the spirit, and yet pursuing it with others.
Okay, good point. Anybody ever heard the phrase work to rule? Am I the only one that's ever heard that?
Like
work to rule.
Is that like manifest destiny?
Well, it's more like I'll do what's required of me, but I'll just do exactly what's required of me. I have to go to work from 8 to 5. At 5 o'clock, I'm checking out. No matter where I am, I'm checking out at 5 o'clock. I had a job when I was much younger. In fact, I was still in high school. And my job was to unload furniture trucks or load furniture trucks. I had to load them and then unload them. And I worked with guys, and we'd be carrying these big, heavy desks and putting them into the truck. And the hardest part, when you're picking up furniture, the hardest part is to get it to here. It's easy to get it up to your knees, but it's hard to get it from your knees up above your shoulders. And we had to stack these things three high. So we'd get the thing picked up, we'd get it to here, and the brake bell would ring. And the guy I was working with would put it back down on the ground. And I thought, no, don't do that. You're just going backwards. Let's go ahead and put it on the stack. Let's be a little bit zealous for doing the work and not just, hey, I work until 5 o'clock, brake bell rings, I quit. Okay. And I understand the way that that works. Part of that came from the boss, because he said brake bell rang at 9:30, 9:45 brake is over, you go back to work. And I got in trouble fairly consistently because he said brake bell rang at 9:30. I said, yeah, I was in the middle of a project. I didn't get done until 9:40. Okay. I'll go back to work at 9:50. I'll take my 10 minutes. But this work to rule kind of philosophy seems to have permeated our culture. Nobody wants to take the extra step and go a little beyond. You know, I'm not going to clean the toilets because that's not my job. I'm not going to take out the trash because that's not my job. But no, if you're like Dean and you own your own business, you're the guy that cleans the toilets and you're the guy that takes out the trash because it's just a job that needs to get done. That's being zealous for doing the job. Okay. Now, I tell a bad story on myself. I moved into an office when I was in graduate school with three other guys. We all shared that office together. One of them graduated, and lo and behold, the powers that be decided that we were now going to share the office with a girl. So for the first time, we decided to clean the bathroom. First time in that entire year, we got through a whole semester, nobody had to clean the bathroom. But we did, because now we had a girl, and somehow you just needed to be nicer. Okay? So be zealous for good work. Not just the bare minimum. Be zealous. You always be the guy who does the extra stuff. Okay. And be ready to, I skipped a slide. Be ready to give an answer when somebody asks you a reason for the hope that's within you. And I'll just mention that, has anybody seen the series of advertisements that are currently running on TV? Some very wealthy Christians that have banded together, and they put together an ad campaign called Jesus Gets Us, or Jesus, He Gets Us. I think that's maybe the way it goes. He Gets Us. Well, those advertisements are generating a lot of response. People are asking questions, and they want to find Christians to hook them up with so that you'll be able to answer the questions that those ads are generating. And I just find that interesting, because that may be the first time I can think of that somebody came to me and asked me the question. And I need to be in a position where I can respond to that. And so when I get back, I'm going to try to learn more about this, and I'll get together with the elders and see if we can't come up with a way that we can be involved in that. So we'll be looking for people that are willing to say, I want to be there to give an answer to somebody that has a question. And it's generating a lot of interest. You know, people don't know much about the church. They don't know much about the Bible. They don't know much about Christianity. But they see these advertisements and they're responding to them. So that may be something that we can do to take advantage of this. But we need to be ready to answer, give people a reason for the hope that's in us. And that's a lot more than I can tell you what you have to do to be a Christian. It's giving people a reason for why we do what we do. Some of that is personal. Comments, thoughts. We're running out of time here. I hate that when we run out of time. Well, let's give that some thought. Let's take that up when I get back. I'm going to be gone next week, and Ted will be teaching Sunday morning and Sunday evening. And so we'll take this up. We'll continue this discussion. This is part of sanctifying the Lord in our hearts. This is what it means to be ready to establish a culture that looks to grow. And so we'll be talking about this even more when I get back. If you're here and you want to know more about God, we would love to sit down with you, talk to you about the things that we have learned about God, and help you to come to an understanding that will benefit you, and be of great value in your life. Remember when we started this, we talked about the honors and responsibilities of being a Christian, of being God's person. And it really is an honor to think that God would want us to be, quote unquote, on his team. But he does. In fact, he wants us to be a part of his team so much that he sent his son to die to make that possible. So we want you to think about that. And it may be that as you consider being on God's team, you say, well, I really haven't been sanctifying the Lord the way that I should. This is an opportunity to make a determination that you're going to sanctify the Lord. That's not to say that you've been out pursuing evil. It may just be saying, you know, I've not been pursuing good.